Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So here we are.
Now, it's typical windy spring weather. This is what they like. Look.
I'm not seeing anything.
You have to get your eye in.
Oh, whoa, yeah.
See them all?
Yeah. So we're at your pond, which is covered over the netting, and there's green stuff, loads of green stuff growing in your pond.
Yes,
and in the middle of it, we have how many frogs?
I counted 40 individuals there this morning. See the ones that are in amplexus, which is called, that's the mating of the frogs. That's when the male grabs her by her back and hangs on for dear life, froggy style. See the clumps of spawn?
Yes, I do.
So here's a trick for you. See the one over there that's really tightly packed?
Yep.
It looks like tiny spawn.
Translucent tapioca?
Yes, that's it. It looks exactly like that. And then it swells up into the regular kind of large frog spawn classic look.
Yeah.
That's only laid probably in the last hour or so. So it comes out really small.
Oh, right.
And then it expands as it absorbs the water into the egg itself.
Oh, wow. I can hear them.
Yeah. They get less shy as the... there we go. There's a male caught in there. They get less shy as the breeding season goes on, because they get into this frenzy, because the competitiveness with the males to breed is just insane, to the point that they get predated by everything. Everything comes down and nails them, which is why I have my net over here.
They just get totally focused, do they?
They get totally focused. If I was to stick my finger in there under one of them males, he'd probably grab onto it and try and hump my hand, which is amazing. See, all their backs have individual markings.
Oh yeah.
So if you really get your eye in, and especially because this group have been living with me for the last 13 years in this backyard.
Really?
Yeah. So they disperse for 6 kilometres around.
Wow.
And then they'll come back here during the breeding season.
God, there's loads of movement there.
No, they're really going at it. See, the males are jostling for position here.
Yeah.
To try and grab onto the females as they get back into the pond. So anything that moves is a potential mate to them, so they'll grab on. And if they grab onto another male, he'll make a distress call. Right. Basically say, get off me, Larry. Which is great.
So you're just reaching down to putting your finger under the belly of a male.
Yes, see if you grab on. No, he's not interested in me. I have to hit the gym. But you see the different patterns, it's so distinct once you get your eye into them.
Yeah.
So that one there has a big black patch on his back, and he's about 7 years old.
So you've actually identified them and you're keeping an eye on them.
Yeah, it's cool. If you wanted to, like, especially with the Herpetological Society, we sometimes take photographs of the backs of them just so we recognise them in different sites. But this is my own backyard, so I kind of just get to know them. I have a big red female, big huge girl. She's 13 years old at least, because she was here the first year I dug the pond out. So
are the females bigger than the males?
Yes.
Right.
So they're sexually dimorphic, which means that there's a big difference in the size of the two sexes. And the reason why most female frogs are bigger than the males is simply because the amount of eggs they have to hold on to.
Right.
So,
do you know what? I haven't seen frogs in donkey's ears in Ireland.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Every garden should have frogs.
Yeah, they totally should. I remember when I was growing up, frog spawn was seen as a scourge.
Yeah, and now it's becoming a very precious thing. Mm. I've been out digging ponds in the local parks, clearing out ponds that are full of trash and stuff the last couple of weeks, because it's important we hang on to the urban populations of amphibians, because we're not going to stop building houses.
Yeah.
So we might as well hang on to and learn to live with the animals rather than push them off altogether, or only have them in isolated patches out in the countryside, you know?
Exactly. They're neighbours. They're cohabiting.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It's magic.
Look, I could, I could see it. Just
you
a head
the,
after
see
head.
See the little juve, little, the tiny little juvenile.
Yeah.
So that's his first. It's his first breeding season, and he hasn't a clue. So what happens a lot is the females, as they make their way back to the pond, the young juvenile males will get grab onto them first, because they're hanging around the outsides.
Yeah.
Whereas the dominant males are in the middle wrestling each other.
Yeah.
And they'll kick the young fellas off her back as soon as you get here.
Okay, I'm seeing one on top of another there. I don't know if that's a male-female thing or just somebody making a mistake.
No, they're all males in the middle there.
Oh, okay, right.
See, the female will want to get in where the spawn is.
Uh-huh.
And that's where all the males are wrestling around that area to kind of push it off, you know.
There's a frog there that looks really big on the right-hand side.
Yeah, that's a female.
Oh, yeah, she's huge compared to the other lads.
They haven't copped on to her yet. You can kind of see the males, they actually look very beefy because they have these big massive forearms, and they have these these pads on their thumbs called nuptial pads.
Oh right.
And they actually form a chemical bond with the female when they grab onto her. It's like a real grab, real.
So it is actually chemistry, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But it's just amazing. There's just a clump of frogs and they're facing in all directions, just clumped up together and moving, and they're sort of about the size of half my hand, really.
Yeah, they vary from palm size to the plenty or thumb for the smaller ones.
Yeah,
now the males are really kicking off now, because if we're very lucky, we might even see a newt or two moving around.
Wow!
Because the newts will follow the snail or the frog straight back into the water.
Yeah,
because a lot of the diet of the newts is frog spawn at this time of year. They'll bury their head into the jelly and take the embryo out of the.
Yeah. There's a lot of pairings up, but I'm assuming they're mistaken pairings.
They're mistaken. There's an actual pairing over here.
Oh, right.
And there's an actual pairing here. And that's probably one of Big Red's daughters.
Right.
You can
so
see that
red
colour.
Yeah. Yeah. Very distinctive. And the one on top
He's like a leopard, isn't he?
He's got beautiful. Oh, yeah. Now I can completely see the markings.
And
I can
you see the arm going under there in the amplexus there.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So amplexus is that stance?
It's that grab. It's the male on top of the female grabbing on. It's almost like a wrestling move.
Wow.
And you can see as well that the colour variation in common frogs is amazing. They vary from like black to bright red, and all the colours in between, green, browns, mottled, stripy. So we get a lot of calls sometimes from people going, oh, this is an exotic animal that escaped, and it's not just one of our own, it's just a really colourful, charming little animal, you know.
Oh, that sound is so
isn't
soothing.
It magic?
It's beautiful.
Now when I come out here tonight, it's going to be chaos. And once it kicks off, then they all get into a frenzy, and it's just insane.
Wow.
I had a couple of hundred here last year, and
did
it was just
really?
madness.
And then they will disperse.
They'll be here for about a week or two. Then the males will, some of the males who haven't gotten females will just amplexus with the eggs and just jizz on them.
Okay.
Because it's just kind of like, in case some of the eggs weren't fertilised, they'll just try and get some of their genes passed off whatever way they can. And they actually physically transform as well. Right now they're really aquatic looking frogs. They're quite slimy and slippery.
Yeah.
After the breeding season is over, they become much more terrestrial, and their skin is less porous, and they just become this much more land-based animal, you know. Some noise, isn't it? It's amazing.
Is that one with a little gold spot on his head, or a piece of?
Oh, it's a piece of grass.
Looks like he's wearing a crown.
Yeah. Oh, they have some ridiculous stuff. It's great to see, isn't it?
Oh, it's just amazing.
And this is a pretty built-up area, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And the pond's not big. What is it?
It's actually
3 metres?
Yeah, it's 9 foot by 6 foot.
Okay.
And it's 4 foot deep.
When they're finished mating, where do they go?
into my neighbour's gardens, into my garden. A lot of people on the road have them in the front gardens. And all. I actually had to put a pond in the front garden, a small, tiny one.
Right.
Because we get so many of them that either get stuck in the front and can't get over the wall, I didn't have a lot of nice kids in the neighbourhood who go, "Mister, have your frogs." They come up with buckets full of them. So,
how long do they stay in Amplexus?
Until she's ready to lay her eggs.
Okay, so the eggs are fertilised outside.
External fertilisation, okay, yeah. So he'll feel her giving a little kind of a jiggle.
Yep.
And he'll feel the eggs physically coming out of her.
Yeah.
And then he'll just release the sperm all over them. And you can see why they're such easy targets for predators at this time, because look at us here. Mm. Now I'm poking them with sticks and sticking microphones in their faces so we can hear them, and they're really not moving at all. They don't really care. So let's see if I can coax one of these guys out. We can have a look at them. There you go.
Just caught one there. Oh my god, he's gorgeous.
See how slippy he is.
Oh yeah.
Now there's that nuptial pad I was telling you about. See?
Wow, yeah.
If you feel it, you can put your hand on it.
Oh my god.
It's really abrasive.
Yeah. So that would latch on. So it's like four fingers, and then the thumb, or what would be the thumb, looks like the thumb,
yeah,
is very strong and has a lump on it. And that's it, is it?
Yeah.
Very muscular legs and arms, and he's getting away. Beautiful pattern. Oh look, he's just flipped over. So he's dark brown on top, very light underneath, almost white. He's got gold flecks through him in different patterns.
And a nictitating membrane over the eyes, so he can. Which is basically like built in goggles.
Yeah. And he's gone back in there, so.
Very hard to hang on to at this time. Yeah, as I said, slimy. They're quite slimy. And
so when all this is over and they start to disperse, and they look different again. Do they
lose that beefy, change,
beefy
yeah,
look?
No, the males will always have that.
Right.
There you go. There's some action over there. A female just popped in.
Yeah.
Bit of wrestling. I think that's gold. I have some other interesting amphibians in the shed if you'd like to come in and have a look.
Absolutely. Alright, so.
Hello.
I don't want anything getting out of here. So, Colly Ennis.
Hello, Colette Kinsella. Welcome back. It's a beautiful day out there.
I believe you have something to show me.
I do. I have something extraordinary to show you.
And I think I used to have something like this myself until, well, let's have a look.
Not too long ago, yeah.
Describe what you have. Describe what you're showing me.
It's long, it's black, and it's slippery.
Is it legal?
It is. It's very legal. It's fine. It's a Mexican salamander called an axolotl, or axolotl, I think.
Axolotl.
Axolotl. Yeah, is the way to pronounce it, but I don't think our tongues are designed to do that thing. Not in this country, anyway.
No.
We're very Catholic and we can't roll our tongues that way. And, I'm quite a hungry one there, as you can see, snapping at my finger. And these are really cool, incredibly unique and bizarre amphibians.
So I'm looking at a very small, well, a container about a foot by a foot. And there's got water in it and what looks like pond water and stuff growing in it. And these two creatures. What is an axolotl or an axolot or an axolotl?
An axolotl. We can call them whatever they are. But what they are basically is a species of salamander. And they are neotic. That's a very posh way of saying that they're eternal teenagers.
Right.
They are the Peter Pans of the amphibian world. And what I mean by that is that they don't mature from their tadpole stage. So all amphibians have a direct connection to reproduction and water,
mm-hmm.
like your frogs that we all know. And the frog spawn is laid. We're just going to use these as an example. The frog spawn is laid. The spawn hatches out, turns into a tadpole. And we all know what happens then. The tadpole matures into an air-breathing adult,
yep.
with lungs, leaves the water, and then the process starts again when they mature.
Yeah.
What the axolotls, what they've done is they've cut out the need to become adults.
Mm-hmm.
So they lay their eggs, the eggs hatch out into these tadpole-like creatures, but they're sexually mature tadpole-like creatures.
Right.
It's a really cool trick. It cuts out the need to go out onto land, and they have achieved every teenager's dream and gotten rid of all the adults. So they're just rocking around the ponds of Mexico, listening to heavy metal, having a great time.
So these are salamanders that refuse to grow up. So at some point during their evolutionary history, it suited them not to metamorphose into the adults and to remain in water. But even in this stage, this is it neotenic?
Neotenic, yeah.
In this neotenic stage, they're able to reproduce. So that's quite extraordinary. So where would you find them?
So Mexico City, a city of 20 million people,
wow,
has a small little patch left of the original lakes that the city was built on. So the Aztecs basically built this place on a series of lakes. And at the time, the axolotls were swarming all over the lakes. When the Aztecs were kicked out by the Spanish drained all the lakes and built the modern city on it. All that's left of those original lakes is a small patch of agricultural land with a series of canals. It looks like an Aztec kind of Venice. So if you look at it from below, it actually looks like roadways, but it's canals. So it's not what we would consider a lake, but it's what's left of a lake, if you know what I mean. And that's the only place you will find them in the wild. And there's a little thing to add on to that. We don't really think they're there anymore, because they're nearly officially extinct in the wild.
No.
Only for some serious conservation work that's been done, it looks like they'd be wiped out from the wild. And it's habitat fragmentation, it's invasive species, and it's chemicals being leaked in from the city. Like, if you have 20 million people living on all sides of this small little water system, basically, whether it is, there's some amount of pollution. And because they're amphibians, they absorb chemicals through their skin quite easily, so that really fucks them up. You know,
I had one of these, and his name was Mario, because they're Mexican axolotls, or we weren't very original in our naming, but I absolutely love them, and I'm going to describe them because they're the most unusual creature. So if you imagine like a tadpole almost, but these ones are juveniles. They're what, 4 inches, 6 inches long, and very long tail, long body, which looks like a tadpole, but they have four legs, and each of the legs, they have four to five toes. I think four toes, and then around their head they have this beautiful frill, which is their gills, right?
Yes.
And the thing that's distinctive about these guys is when you look at them full on, they almost look like they're smiling. They have this beautiful face. Do you know what? Our Mario died, our Mexican axolotl died, and I was absolutely devastated. And you know what? His anniversary was 2 days ago. He's 4 years dead 2 days ago. I still remember him.
I'd have to sort you out with some, because I've been breeding him quite successfully for the last 20 years. And for me, like, every episode I'm going to say they're one of my favourite animals, but these are like, I have a kind of a romantic little feeling for them. Not in a now a freaky, I'm going to jump in and start banging an axolotl, but no, I have look at how aggressive they are. As feeders, they're just charming.
They are
really
charming.
Unusual. And also I have this thing as well where it's like a window into the prehistory. There was animals like these, like Coelacanthus, which is an ancient amphibian that would have lived around the same times as the dinosaurs. These guys were huge, 6 foot long. They were around before crocodiles basically took over the waterways, and like these giant amphibians that looked exactly like these. So imagine a 6 foot one of them, and they'd be taking small dinosaurs at the edge of the lakes and ponds. Incredible animals. So these are a little window into like those ancient times, and our ancestors would have looked very similar to these as well.
Right.
The first tetrapods that would have been crawling around in weeds in stagnant lakes back in the day. So I really like picturing myself back then when I'm looking at these guys. It's like a little window into that world. They actually have four toes at the front.
All right.
And five at the back.
There you go. So the ones that you have now are dark coloured, but there's...
Yeah, they're the natural colour. So that's the natural coloration. There are variations, obviously, like everything that we've made into pets. You can breed them to be leucistic or albino, and then there's all the colour variations in between, gold and mottled. So, it's very interesting to see all the different breeds they've gotten from from these animals. What's after happening, though, there seems to be a genetic bottleneck in them in captivity, because so few were taken originally from the wild, and they breed so readily that they're probably all banjo players from banging their cousins. So we have to kind of, a lot of scientists are trying to save that the good genes from the last few wild populations that are out there, you know.
Our little dude was the same colour as yours, and I'm glad that we had him. So we got him because of the Celtic tiger, the same way as you, and the snakes that people have been dropping off. There was a couple emigrating to Canada and they couldn't take their axolotl, and they adored him, so they gave him to us. They even came to say goodbye to him before they left, and we don't know how he's dead.
Oh, well, hopefully they're not listening to the podcast. Can you tell the sex?
I don't know how to tell the sex. Go on, tell me.
Well, even here you can see the old ball bag is swelling on the back of the male. It's a very technical terminology I'm using here. So the males get a big set of nuts at the back here. And that's really how you tell them as soon as they get big. They're ambush predators. They have a system of feeding basically where they use suction. And they have small gripping pads inside their mouth. So anything that moves past them, they'll literally just hoover it. They'll open their mouth really fast and create a vacuum. And then the prey just goes into the mouth. And you can see them using their eyes to swallow like most amphibians. They'll push their little eyes back. It's very, very cute to look at.
They really are charming.
Yeah.
Like,
they have lungs as well as gills.
Oh, do they?
Very simple. They're not as well developed. And occasionally you will get one or two that metamorphose into adults, proper adults. And that's kind of like, it's deeply embedded in their genetic code, and it's kind of an insurance policy. So if a lake dried out, you'll get one or two that will survive and go on to breed on to the next time. And you can induce it by injecting chemicals into them in the lab.
If you're a sadistic bastard.
Well, it's interesting for science. And these guys are incredibly important for our health, for a number of reasons, because they have another amazing ability, is that they can regenerate limbs, regenerate body parts. You can even transfer brain matter from one to another and it will absorb it into its body and redevelop it. They've even been able to like regrow parts of their essential organs, like their hearts. It's an incredible ability, and if we can kind of tap into that, you're talking about people being able to regenerate limbs, and it's tied in with a lot of stem cell research. Also, the fact that they breed so readily in captivity, and because their embryos are so big, it's great for doing experiments on in the lab. You can see the development really easily.
Right.
And you can
look. There's one.
Find out what you need to know.
There's one just swimming up to the front of the tank. Look, yeah. They are beautiful, like that big smile, the fronds.
Wouldn't be beautiful now if you were warm.
True. Oy. There you go. You just put your finger in and boom, he went straight for it.
Yeah.
Like, not shy.
Not shy at all, no.
And then he's just dangling there. Look at that face. They are beautiful creatures, aren't they?
So I have a... They're gorgeous. I have a... They actually look like Pokemons almost.
They do, actually.
Don't they? Yeah.
They do.
I actually would breed a few of them in the garden. So they're in raised ponds outside. But I take some inside every year, just as an insurance policy. And also, so I get them used to coming up if I put my finger.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We're in.
Yeah.
Coming up to feed.
Right.
When one of them comes up to feed, the rest of them tend to come up as well. Uh-huh. So it makes my feeding a lot easier and it makes my ability to count them a lot easier. Otherwise, I'm draining ponds or fishing them out and I don't want to stress them. So you can see here, they're actually quite...
He's coming up to you.
He's coming right up.
You're putting the finger just on top of the water.
Just there. And he's just associating me with a bit of food. We'll give him something to eat, will we?
So we got some mealworms there.
Yeah.
Alive.
Alive. There we go. Let's see what we have here.
So you're putting it in there and he's coming up. Oh,
and gone.
Completely, yeah, really fast.
See now, and the crushing pads now. If you were watching this.
The worm is sticking out of his mouth.
Yeah, and he's crushing it.
Gone.
And then boom, down. And you'll see the eyes turn back in the head.
Wow.
So amphibians, a lot of amphibians will use their, they haven't got a swallow like we would have in our throat.
Right.
So they actually use their eyes to force the food down the back of their throat.
Very cute.
They're bizarre.
Very cute. So how do they breed? Like, what do they look like? Do they produce something like frog spawn or is it different again?
It's individual frog spawn, if you can imagine that. You have the cell in the middle, which is the actual egg, and then you have the gelatinous covering around the outside. Gelatinous. I sound like a proper scientist there. It's the jelly around the edge. It's a very clear jelly. So it looks like an individual frog spawn.
Right.
And what they do is they'll see the fronds of the plants here.
Yeah.
They'll be attached to all over.
Oh,
and
right.
They breed once a year and about 200 eggs for a female. So you can imagine... They're quite productive if you can get them breeding in captivity. I first bred them by accident. I had a house party.
Okay, this is this is going somewhere
some
interesting.
Sexy music. No, I had a house party and I had the sink full of, you know, the usual sink full of ice with all the bottles in it. And at the end of the party, I was like emptying out the sink full of ice, and it was a bit of a warm day.
Huh.
And I'm conscious that they don't like warm temperatures. They're temperate species, like, so I said, I'll just put some ice in with them to cool them down a little bit. And I put the ice in, and the next day I woke up and there was eggs everywhere.
Wow.
And I was like, I wonder, being the curious mind that I had, I was like, I wonder what caused that. And yeah, I was talking to some of my mates and read up on it, and actually the drop in temperature stimulates breeding.
Oh wow. So when you say they don't like warm temperatures, what temperature are you talking about?
Well, anything above 25 or so in the water, it's actually very stresses them out and causes them. Like in Mexico City, you think of Mexico as being really warm. Mexico City is very high up and quite cool.
Mm.
So, you know, they're not a... I've seen them in pet shops and in people keeping them with heaters in them, and it just stresses them out, shortens their lifespan, makes them more prone to disease. In fact, I've friends in America I've heard about who keep them in the fridge, in the tray in the bottom of the fridge.
Really? That would be like 8 degrees. Would that not be too cold? That's still okay?
No, it's fine.
Oh, wow.
What should they live under frozen ice?
Right.
No problem.
Yeah.
So
one of them's just hanging there now.
He's hanging there.
He
knows there's food around, so he's
like,
looking
give
for
me
something.
More. Oh, my God, they're so cute. Yeah. They are beautiful creatures.
Yep. Now, they're not your classical... what you think... When you think about conservation, what do you think about?
Big stuff.
Yeah. You know, charismatic megafauna, like rhinos, tigers, all that sort of stuff. These should be icons of conservation.
Mm.
And I'll tell you why. So when you go out into the wild, or if I was to say to you, in the wild there'd be no more tigers.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow we're getting rid of all the tigers because you know what? We've got a load of zoos and they'd be fine there. People would freak.
Mm.
Absolutely freak out. You can't do that. You need them in the wild. Same thing is happening with these guys. They're disappearing from their original place where they are supposed to be, out in the wild. But everybody's like, ah, well, there's millions of them in captivity. Doesn't make any difference. Mm. They're the exact same, and it should be while they're well looked after in labs and pets and all that sort of they should have a population in the natural habitat.
And the reason, I suppose one of the reasons is that they're part of an ecosystem. They have their place within an ecosystem.
Yes.
If they're gone, they're impacting the environment, and if they're there, they're impacting in a different way. So they're part of the interdependency of various ecosystems, right?
Exactly.
But also as well...
And
also,
a very unique ecosystem. Mm, and they're a very... They're the weirdest animal ever. There's a little fish actually that lives, that's a native beside, that lives alongside, and that they would predate on a lot.
Yeah.
And that's disappearing as well, again, because of introduced African species of fish and carp and the pollution. And these fish that will live in basically in toilet water, they wouldn't give a damn.
Mm.
But these guys and the native fish that live alongside them are quite sensitive. And, you know, when you lose that ecosystem, it's tragic.
Yeah.
It is.
So if you're concentrating on these guys, for example, which are smaller, they're not as charismatic, they're not as obvious as tigers and rhinos, by conserving these guys and their environment, you're also conserving tons of other animals, right?
Yes, because
it's never just the one.
Exactly. So they'd be like the headstone or the top of the pile of that species of that particular ecosystem.
Yeah.
But in order for them to be in good nick, the rest of the supporting cast have to be there.
Exactly.
And be in reasonable shape as well. So
exactly. It's like you wouldn't have a film without the film star, but you wouldn't have a film without the supporting cast.
Yeah, it's even if you're out talking about tigers or elephants or any of the bigger thing, you can't have a tiger without a large park, deer, peacocks, the whole thing.
All the way down to insects.
Exactly. So it all ties in, and I really think axolotls should be a spearhead for conservation because they're very, very cute. Very unique animals. I can't think of anything out there quite as unique as axolotls and quite as common that people can access them. You can have one as a pet, anyone can.
Yeah.
But like, it's just.
But they're so specific to certain areas that it'd just be a shame to lose them.
Yes, 100%.
So I have a story for you.
Cool. Fire
and on. It's about something that's not an axolotl, but it looks like an axolotl.
Right.
So what we're looking at is a Mexican axolotl. And this is a type of salamander that doesn't metamorphose into its adult form, but can actually reproduce in the larval stage. Is that right?
That's true. 100%.
Cool. Now, my understanding is there's a couple of species of salamander that don't metamorphose and sort of look like axolotls, but we don't call them axolotls. Yeah.
Mole salamanders, the family of mole salamanders, a lot of them tend to have this ability to stay in their youthful forms. Yeah.
So, through the power of audio, I'm going to take you to Mexico.
Okay.
Do you want to head?
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
All right, let's go.
Do I need a passport?
Crash helmet.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take the critter shed to Mexico. I want you to imagine a hilltop in Mexico.
Right.
And on top of this hill is a beautiful convent. It's whitewashed. It's got lovely brown columns on it. Inside this convent, there are about 23, 24, 25 nuns. And they are all dressed in white habits. They have blue rosary beads around their waist and they have black veils. So these women, for 150 years, have been working with something that looked like these axolotls, but they are, in fact, I'm going to attempt the Latin name, they are Ambystoma domerili, and they're a type of salamander that don't metamorphose, but actually reproduce.
Cousins of the axolotls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about these women is somebody came up with the idea that something in their skin was really good for alleviating coughs and anemia. So for 150 years, they've actually been taking these animals, these salamanders, from one particular lake. It's only one. They only exist in one lake beside this convent. It's about 300 kilometers west of Mexico City. So they've been taking these animals and actually breeding them inside their convent. And then doing something, they don't really tell you what they do, but essentially they've been juicing them or making some sort of juice from their skins, and it's been sold at local markets. So they inadvertently have been working to actually conserve these species because they reckon the numbers of these wild animals that exist now in this one particular lake has just gone way down. They reckon there's like less than 100.
Yeah.
So weirdly, these women have been conserving the animals.
While juicing them.
Yeah. So now they're working together with people from Chester Zoo in the UK and another university. So they're working together now as scientists to to conserve these animals. But it's just, when you see the images, and I've seen pictures of them on the internet, it's absolutely mad. You have the beautiful convent, you have these women in their white habits and their black veils and their rosary beads. And if you go into the back of the convent, there's two rooms where there's just tons and tons of tanks,
fish,
right?
Fish tanks everywhere,
fish,
yeah.
Fish tanks, bigger obviously than the one you have, but very, very similar. With animals that look very similar to your axolotls there. But at the backs of all these fish tanks, you have, you know, religious icons. You have pictures of the baby Jesus. You have pictures of Jesus beside a lake with a fish on a stick. And
brilliant.
Below all this, you have these women with their little nets and they're feeding and they're taking temperatures and whatever. And they see this as a sacred work.
Yeah.
Because going back even further, legend has it that a young girl, an indigenous girl, appeared somewhere mysteriously and gave the recipe for this juice to the local nuns.
That's
and
amazing.
The part of this legend is that this local indigenous girl was actually the Virgin Mary. So these women see themselves as doing sacred work. It was never about conservation. But back in the 1980s, they discovered that numbers were dropping and there were scientists who were interested. So they decided to work together with the scientists.
That's great.
The animals are not off the hook. They still get juiced.
Yes.
But now they're working together with scientists to work out if they can get enough pairs with enough genetic diversity, they might be able to introduce them back into the wild. So it's one of those weird stories of...
That is great. Yeah. So the Virgin Mary shows up dressed as Pocahontas to give a nun a recipe for cough syrup.
Yes.
And now we're saving axolotl's cousins from extinction.
Nicely summed up. You couldn't
Bravo.
Make it up. You couldn't make it up.
That's crazy, that is. Do you know the axolotls themselves are used in cough syrup? They're used in erection medicines. They fed the Spanish army during the 16th century.
Really?
100%.
They were our guys, the one you have here.
The stable diet of the local fishermen for years. So that's another reason why like a lot of people are very upset that they're gone. They were worshipped by the Aztecs.
Really?
They were the god, believed to be the incarnation of the god of deformities, Xolotl. Which is part of where the axolotl.
How that name?
My boring tongue won't do that. But they're the physical incarnation of Xolotl, the god of deformities.
The god of deformities. Yeah. That is so cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like they're anything but deformed. They're so beautiful.
Yeah, I suppose we have the luxury of looking at them in beautiful clear plastic fish tanks.
Yeah.
But when you're an Aztec warrior who's whipping one out for to put on his kebab or having his ham sandwich roll, when you take them out of the water, they're quite weird looking things. If you just take them out and hold them in your hand, they look like the weirdest, and I could see why they'd be associated with deformities and you know. So yeah, there you go. I just have this horrible vision of what the nuns are doing to them. How are they getting the juice out of them? They're not wanking them off, right? Crazy. Are they actually sticking them in blenders?
I was wondering when we go there.
A very trendy phrase going around in conservation at the moment, and it's called citizen science. And it's something that everybody needs to recognise that there's everybody is a scientist, and everybody can be capable of being a scientist. Expertise can come from anyone. There's the local guy in England who has saved populations of the common toads because he gets up every night and he walks them across and he recognises individuals. There's the person who's out feeding the rare birds that are dying out in urban areas. All that stuff counts. Those nuns are scientists. I don't care what anyone says. And they know their stuff. And once you get your eye into anything, that expertise is amazing. And it's invaluable to the scientists who go to the nuns and approach them and say, we need your help. So that's a really cool, all joking aside, it's a really cool story. And it goes to show that anybody can help. Anybody can get involved in this stuff. You know, I keep drilling it into people's heads. Like, I'm not a I'm not a scientist. I'm a hands-on kind of conservationist person. And, you know, and I encourage everybody to do the same, you know. There you go. You don't have to be a nun, though, to do it. Jesus. Try and avoid that if you can. Oh, God. Lonely nuns making juice out of
salamanders.
It's bizarre.
Couldn't make it up.
Yeah. I can show you my breeding tanks down my side passage if you like.
You can indeed.
That sounds so ropey. Let me take you to a breeding tank down my side passage.
Collie, this is the highlight of my week. Yeah. Your breeding tank and your side passage.
Side passage, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So we're back in the shed. That was a nice trip to Mexico.
Yeah, my God. All those nuns. They're already hot in my head. I don't know why they were hot in my head. Hot nuns. They're probably all ancient. Right, I guess the frogs are still at it.
Alright, we're going down Collie's side passage.
That's not a euphemism.
So here you have
these are my axolotl breeding tanks.
It's a tank and it's, we're looking in what's that window going into?
That's
is that your kitchen?
Jacks.
Your jacks, okay.
Toilet. That's the toilet facilities.
So
it's quite deep.
The tank is lined with,
it's a pond liner. It's an attic tank.
Oh, okay.
So I got it out of an old house, a skip I found. I'm a skip raider. I love raiding skips for stuff for my animals. But there was a hole in the bottom, obviously, for the piping. So I just got this Chinese pond liner and used that.
And I'm seeing now, dead mealworms on top.
Mealworms, yeah.
So this is where they breed.
This is one of... Now, there's a lot of dark axolotls, which you won't see.
Okay.
But what
Your
I might be able
gone
to
in.
Do...
You've gone looking, fishing for something.
Oh, there she is.
Okay. Oh my gosh, I can see a white one. A light coloured one.
Yeah.
Big. A big
She's
one.
She's a big girl. She's full of eggs too.
All right.
Now, I don't want to stir up the water because we won't see her again.
Yeah.
Here we go. Once you tickle
her. Almost have her.
There we
go. Oh, she's...
Go.
So she's... Oh, she's lovely. She's bigger than the juveniles now. And she is...
In a bucket.
She's in a bucket. And she is like... Golden colour with pink gills.
Yes, she's albino. She's
albino,
actually, yeah,
okay.
Completely albino.
She's got red eyes.
And you can see the, you can actually see the eggs inside her there.
Oh yeah, so her abdomen, her little ribby cage is sort of full.
Full.
Yeah.
Absolutely full. Have you got any eggs around here? No. So there's a lot of darker males in there, which you won't see.
Yeah.
But you can see the gills, nice and healthy.
Yeah.
And what happens is when they're in the wild, when you see how cold that water is,
cold, yeah,
yeah. When you put them out into the ponds like this,
yeah,
they really revert to their wild state. They're not that pristine,
right,
friendly looking things. They turn into these little water dragons, which I love. So I had to cover this because I had a load of white ones in here,
yeah,
which I was going to breed. And I came down one morning and I found Mr. Heron.
Oh, okay.
With his beak,
having a snack,
and he had a few of them. Yeah, so
right.
He had a Mexican takeaway. So, I hate that heron. I really hate my dear. My wife thinks I'm obsessed. I'd be sitting there and I'm like, I'm gonna get you. But like, they're
like Wile E. Coyote.
Oh, they're a protected species, so you can't. I don't want to harm them or annoy. You know, but what I've been like running that out and setting up scarecrows and all sorts of things. So what I had to do in the end was, like, obviously I have the cage, the netting over this,
yeah,
and the netting over my pond. But last year, it got so bad I had to actually put like a physical spider web with fishing wire
right
across the garden. Everybody thought I was losing my mind. So yeah, heron wars. The heron wars of 2018. It was a dark time for everybody involved. So anyway, yeah, so the spawn gets laid. I pluck these long leaves down.
Oh, look at that. That's an aquatic plant. Beautiful long aquatic plant.
Pop them in, and that means I can just pull it out like that and check, and you see it wrap. You'll see them. She'll fold. There's an egg, is it?
So they're long. It's a long plant, and there's leaves coming out of it.
So it'll be similar to this. That's not an egg, but it'll be very similar to that, except covered in
gel.
Gel. Yeah, exactly.
Gloop.
And take the plant out, and then they go in here.
Right. So they go into a like a plastic tank that's next to this. So
yes.
It's a separate.
And the reason for that is. Bye bye baby, I'll put her back in.
How big is she?
She's about 6 inches.
Right.
Head to tail. And she'll get a lot bigger.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the max length that you've seen?
I've seen one just 7 or 8 inches in
really?
My I have them in the massive pond out there, but they're dragons. I wouldn't put them in near anything else.
Right.
They're crazy. But Yeah, so as soon as the eggs hatch, basically the parents will eat them. So I transfer them into the other tanks. There's also, if you look in the bottom of those tanks, they've been sitting there here. So there's a lot of caddisfly larva, you know, all the kind of good bugs,
yeah,
mosquito larva, all that sort of stuff.
Are living in there. Do they occur naturally, or did you put them in?
They just come in.
Okay.
You leave water out, things will just show up in it.
Yeah.
And then,
how big are the larvae when they hatch?
So they'd be like, the larvae when they hatch would be about
few millimetres,
yeah, like the very tip of a pin,
right? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Tiny, like tiny little things, and they have no back legs, they only have their front legs,
right,
and the gills.
Oh, yeah,
so like, and they'll just disappear, and a lot of them will eat each other and eat each other's arms, which is part of their regeneration process.
So they just grow back then,
they'll grow back as they get older, their ability to regenerate fades away,
okay.
As they get older, obviously, like us all, they start to feel the strain. And if they metamorphose into an adult, which occasionally happens,
into a salamander,
a proper salamander, if they actually do change, their ability is nearly disappears.
Okay,
so it's very
That's
strange.
So they have these superpowers while they're in this.
Yeah, this state of youth. This youthful kind of
reluctance to grow up.
Exactly. And I think that's why I'm quite fond of them. Like myself, they're eternal
teenagers.
Eternal teenagers. Just refuse to grow up and act responsibly. And
do you play them Slayer?
I play a lot of heavy metal for them, yeah. Play everything.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
doesn't
amazing.
Look pretty. It's not pretty like the rest of my garden, but it's practical and it works well, you know.
Yeah. And is cold water. I'm surprised at how cold it is.
Yeah. And how well they're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Back into your side passage. I think a cup of tea is in order.
I think a cup of tea is very much in order, and we'll put these axolotls back into the kitchen where they belong.
Yep.
Where it's nice and cool, because I don't want them getting warm here, and I certainly don't want any nuns coming into my house and juicing them on me, salting my beautiful salamanders.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.